Welcome to day three of the WSET Diploma Student Summit 2021, where I'm speaking with Derek Crooks. Derek was awarded the Moët & Chandon Prize for his performance in the Unit 5 Sparkling Wines exam, the equivalent of the current D4. We hear his origin story and tale of entry into the wine trade. He talks the transition from level 3 to level 4, shares broader reflections on the diploma, stopping by his experiences of sparkling wine and the now gone spirits unit. He talks Unit 3, the Light Wines of the World exam. Before answering three attendee questions, firstly addressing the recommended order for theory and tasting in D4 and D5, next, sharing tips for studying theory, including what not to do. And finally, overcoming exam jitters. He closes by reflecting on the Moët & Chandon Prize itself and offers his closing thoughts to summit attendees. Enjoy.
So I grew up in a bar, weirdly. When I was a child, I grew up on a campsite. My parents owned a holiday camp in Devon. I guess my first experiences growing up, very strangely, were in a bar. When I was fairly young, which is probably not PC these days, but I got to taste some beer and some wine, and that was about it. But that's where it kind of started, my interest in it. I think I was given stuff like Blue Nun and some very old-fashioned wines that aren't popular these days. Obviously too young to really get into wine then, but became a wine waiter to get me through the last year of university. So I actually studied journalism. I did journalism for 20 years before getting into wine, into the wine industry, sorry. I spent a whole year giving people wine, and that kind of kicked off a little bit of an interest in different types of wine and what wines they were serving and why they were serving them, and sparkling wine for the beginning of the evening and the spirits for the end of the evening, that sort of thing. We went to a course at a shop where I used to live near in London. I used to live in Collierswood, and we used to live, it's near Wimbledon. I went to a course at a shop there, and we did a couple of terms of wine. So there's a very passionate wine educator who came into the shop every Monday, and we went through the whole of the world, basically. So we started off on France and went through all the usual kind of areas of the world, and I went to every single one. I was so interested in where all the wine was coming from and tasting the wines and why they tasted as they did. And that was about 15 years ago. So that was really what started me in my serious kind of wine obsession, as my wife likes to call it. From there, it kind of trickled into becoming more and more interested in wine. And I started doing the WSET courses, the WSET courses. As you know, ended in doing the diploma and getting into the wine industry. Because of COVID-19, my plans have been put on hold a little bit. I've been working for the past 2 years in a wine shop in Cornwall, where I live, which has given me a really good background in retail after doing the diploma. I did a bit of it while I was working at the shop, or the end of it. I kind of put my plans on hold doing a tasting, putting together a website where I will go into people's houses, cottages, businesses, whatever, and do some fun tastings. And it all goes back to the my experience in the shop, basically, that where, you know, I did the terms and got to know about all the wine and these funny little facts that you pick up along the way in the wine industry about why glass was strengthened in the champagne industry, for instance, and how the British influenced that. That was a really mind-blowing fact for me at the time. It's obviously obvious now to most people in the wine industry, but to normal people, that's a really interesting fact. So it's those kind of things. It's going into people's houses, going to businesses, having a bit of fun with wine, and teaching people, you know, where it's from, if they like Rioja, they will like this other wine. If they like a Chardonnay, they will like this other wine and why you'll like it. And if you go into a supermarket, you look at the shelves and that sort of thing. Anyway, so my plans have been put a little bit on hold, but this year, hopefully with COVID becoming less of an issue later in the year, then I will pick that up a little bit. But that's the idea anyway. And I'm going to be sourcing the wines online with suppliers, actually, so I don't compete with shops, supermarkets, that sort of thing in my area. So I'll have a kind of a unique proposition, so that if people actually want to buy the wines at the other end as well, they can do that. So it's not unique, but in Cornwall, there's definitely a call for that side of things. There are already courses that are being taught. There are lots of shops in Cornwall. There are lots of other wine-related things, but there isn't really this kind of business. So that's the idea anyway. So that's what it's all led me to.
For me, it's always interesting to understand the transition from level 3 to level 4, because since I put this summit online, I have actually had quite a few people sort of contacted me and saying, I'm doing the level 3 or I've done the level 3. Is it okay if I take a look? And I think there will be some interested people who are at level 3 sort of considering whether or not to do level 4. And I'm just curious what was sort of some of the deliberations that went through your head when you were making that transition?
Doing level 3 was extremely difficult for me at the time. And that was it. I think I did level 3 in 2016 or 2017. And I had a full-time job at the time. I was working for, I used to work for Newsbeat at Radio 1 as a journalist, which is a fairly full-on job. It takes up lots of hours at work and also outside work, looking for stories and that side of things. So I did the level 3. I took a week off actually from work, and I did it as a course from Monday to Friday. So you do all the learning, as you probably know, between Monday and Thursday, and then you do the exam on the Friday. So for me, that was doable. It was a lot of work that week. And then I think I did it in 2017, so it may have changed, but you had the two wines that you had to identify and to critique. And then you had a couple of questions in the exam. So the big difference between level 3 and the diploma is just the amount of information and the time that you need to put into it. So luckily or fortunate for me, I left my job in London and we moved to Cornwall. That was at the end of 2017. And I started working part-time. So I started working in a wine shop in the evenings, mainly. And I had the mornings where I was working in the toy industry, actually. And then in the afternoons, luckily for me, I had the chance to study every afternoon. So I know a lot of other people haven't got that amount of time. So I was very lucky in that respect. But if you haven't got that amount of time, you do need to put in that time around the edges. So I did do more work at certain stages, so I couldn't work in the evenings, obviously. So I'd say that the commitment to the diploma is vastly taxing on your time compared to level 3. Level 3 does seem hard at the time. I know that. I know a lot of people find it tricky, but the diploma is on a different scale. And obviously it takes 2 years. There's lots of different units, which you'll know about if you're going through it. But there's the business side of it, which you do first. And then there are the specific units for sparkling wine, fortified wine. I did spirits when I was doing mine, but obviously that's a separate one now. And then obviously the massive light wines of the world, or the three at the end. The other commitment is money. I'd say if a lot of people that I was on the course with were being sponsored by their businesses, by the companies they work for, and I wasn't actually in the industry at the time. So if you're doing it from an outside perspective, you also need to think very carefully about the money and where it's coming from and the amount it's going to cost, because it's not just the cost of the course. It's the cost of the wine that you'll need to buy. You'll need to buy lots of wine for the last one, for the light wines and for all the other ones, actually, because you do need to taste widely. And I know people say this all the time, but it's one of the best bits of advice that I can give. Obviously I did it when there were tastings externally, which helped. I know there are a lot of online ones that you can do now, but so the step up from level 3 to diploma is a mixed one, but it's definitely time, and his money. And you do have to put a lot of effort into it as well, I've got to say. It's not just something you can pick up and pass. There's no way that you'll be able to do it if you don't try. I know a lot of people that do it that English isn't their first language as well, which makes it even harder. So I had an advantage in that respect as well. But yeah, you just need a lot of time, a lot of effort, a bit of money, and you'll get through it. It's like anything, and it's like going back to school again. level three was a kind of a fun course, although it was hard at work at the time. But the diploma was like being back at school again and having to revise and really having to remember facts, which I hadn't done for a long time. You get used to that in the end, but yeah, those are the main differences, I think, for me, that from level three to the diploma. It's just, yeah, a big step up, I'd say. But one that you can do.
I guess we're in a really positive position here that you're able to look back on the diploma, having already passed and, you know, having already overcome all of those challenges that you've kind of alluded to. So I just really want to ask you, you know, very, very sort of broad scene-setting question, really, which is just really your broader reflections on the diploma and really, you know, how do you think back and look back on the experience today?
Well, I look back on the experience with fondness now, having done it and passed it. But at the time, I remember every waking moment was thinking about the diploma and thinking about the next exam and thinking about coursework. So I don't think I knew what I was getting into when I first started it. I kind of thought that the step up from level three to diploma wouldn't have been so big. We did, back when I did it, the first unit was the business unit, was a multiple choice unit, which was all the, you know, the vines and how they grow and all the basic, so the anatomy of vines and grapes and why they grow where they do and all that sort of stuff. So that took a couple of months to study for. So when I left my job, or when I was leaving my job, we moved to Cornwall in November 2017, and we got the book. And the book for that level at the time wasn't too big, so I wasn't too freaked out about it. It was bigger, about as big as the level three book. But I thought that would be the case. And it had obviously had a lot of information in it and a lot of really technical detail about grapes and rootstocks and all sorts of bits and pieces, which you'll know about if you do the diploma. But so I thought, okay, that's fine. When I got to the exam, I hadn't done an exam for quite a few years, a proper exam like that. And I did fairly well at the multiple choice one, but I don't think I realized the amount of work that you had to put in to do well, even at that level in the multiple choice. So I know it's a unit now and I know it's different, but the same advice still stands, that just think from the very start you need to work out a kind of a plan of what to do. So that was my first experience, and getting the first result back from that was actually very scary, because I was, you know, then you know if you've been doing well, you know what you've been doing. I think I got 69%, so I got a pass with merit, but a lot of other people got better marks than me. So I was like, okay. So I thought I'd done fairly well, and I kind of half expected to be doing at that level at that time, because I was still traveling between Cornwall and London. So I still had the job. So then I actually left, like, as I said before, I left my job. I got a part-time job at the BBC down in Cornwall that next year in 2018. And that's when the some of the bigger exams started. So I think I had the fortified wine exam later that year in November. Anyway, so that was the first exam that I remember with the tasting and with the exam questions, the three exam questions. So we had an hour for each at the time. I think you have an hour and a half for each of the now. So the time it took to write out those questions during the exam and do the tasting was very scary actually at the time. So, cause I'd never done that at the time. So I'd never done blind tasting. You can do that as much as you want in practice, but it doesn't really make you ready for it until you go into the exam. So yeah, that was a good thing to do. I did fairly well at the theory. I did very well at theory. I got a distinction for the theory, and I got just a pass for the tasting. So that was a kind of a note to myself that I needed to do better at tasting. And I'd done as much tasting as I could do for Fortified, but it still got me just a pass. So you kind of have to think to yourself about how you can change your tasting and your theory. So I think I was doing fairly well at theory, but not as well at tasting. Anyway, which brings me along to the exam. I think I did sparkling wine exam, which I got the prize for. I actually went to first of all, I really love sparkling wine. It was one of the areas of wine which is why I got into the wine industry. I've always loved champagne. I've always loved English sparkling wine. For as long as it's been good, decent, and lots all the other sparkling wines in the world. So I love them all. And actually, for the exam, for me, the theory was the hardest part of that exam, and the tasting for me was the easier part. But I think it was easier because I got some outside help. I started to get some outside help for tasting because I thought, being not in the industry, I needed to have a bit of a push and a bit of a pointer towards what I was doing and where I was coming from and what I should be doing. So I went to a class run by Jim Gore, who used to run the WSET London School, and I'm sure plenty of other people have done that as well. And of course, there are lots of other people doing courses as well, so I'm sure they're all very good. But I did Jim's, just gave me some useful tips and advice on what to taste, what I was tasting, the keywords that you should be writing down the exam, all that sort of stuff. And when I got to the exam, actually, It just clicked on that exam. I'm not entirely sure why or it's probably a mix of all those things that I liked sparkling wine anyway. Before I got the help, I enjoyed the subject area. I did come out of the theory thinking that I hadn't done as well as I did do in the exam, so I came out of it thinking perhaps I'd passed it, but I got a distinction for both. A lot of people after the exam were talking to me about how they'd failed that unit. So, which a few people did in my class actually. So I was even more shocked when I got the distinction for both in that one. So that was that one, and then the spirits one was next. Which for me, having never done anything with spirits, was the tricky one actually. So we did a special course. We did the course that I did. I was at the London School. And actually, during the course, really started to enjoy it. You pick up all the tips, obviously, and then you go into the exam. And weirdly, for the spirits exam, we'd gone to the Royal Albert Hall for a concert. And after the concert, we went to a Spanish bar. And because I was doing the spirits section of it, I ordered a Spanish brandy. So Spanish brandy comes out, and it was the nicest Spanish brandy that I think I've ever had. Anyway, we got to the exam and the spirits exam, and what did I smell in my glass? It was definitely Spanish brandy. So anyway, I'll always remember that because it was a time and a place. And I think that's a good tip actually for remembering smells in my part. Anyway, that's taught me that you can remember smells with a place, not just with remembering what they should smell like. And the spirits one. So the theory I did okay in, and the tasting did better in. And then I think that was the final part was the light wines, which they were changing the course at the time. So they changed it from the old syllabus to the new syllabus. So the light wines for me was a very tricky part, not only because they changed the syllabus, but we only got the book they call it at the moment. So that's with all the information in it about the light wines. We only got that a month and a half or 2 months before the exam. So we got it in August and we had to do the exam in October. So yeah, that's about 2.5 months. So trying to remember all that information in that time. I mean, we'd already started because we'd obviously, you have to start before then to remember all the facts, but a lot of it had changed. So that was scary, but I think because it was so scary, it kind of spurred me on to remember things in different ways and to really knuckle down. And I bought a lot of wine, spent a lot of money on different types of wine and with a focus. But and by the time we got to it, I don't think you ever feel ready for that last exam, but as ready as you can be. I was, and then I passed that as well, and here we are today. So it was a long and involved and up and down journey. I'm sure everyone else has had as well, but I think you do become better at exam technique and better at theory, you know, writing questions. That was another thing I found really hard was writing. As you don't realize at the time, was I hadn't handwritten anything for years and years and years. And the pain in my arms the first time I had to write for an hour was intense. So for the final exams, the light ones, you have to write for hours and hours and hours. So it's about 3 or 4 hours. So so that's definitely an experience.
I've got here some specific questions from attendees of the summit who've asked to ask you their questions on their behalf. So the first question from the attendees is, for D4 sparkling wines and D5 fortified exam, would you recommend attempting the tasting or the theory part first, and why?
So I always like to do the tasting first, and I'd like to do the tasting first just because they were fresh. So the samples are fresh, so that's what I mean. They'd just been poured. So basically, I think that the system for doing that, they transfer the wines into other bottles, and then they cool them, and then they give them to you, and then they're sat in the glass. I mean, so my thoughts were, I always wanted to read the theory questions and let them percolate into my mind, but I wanted to do the tasting first so that my subconscious could get going with the theory. Not that that happened. And then my taste buds, when they're fresh, can taste the wines. And the other side of that is, of course, is that you can then taste, if you have time, you can retaste your wines after your theory when, so the fizz is gone. So that's, as a lot of people will know, or hopefully they'll know, is that it's hard to in the sparkling wine world anyway, to get lots of descriptors for smells and for taste when there's lots of bubbles. Obviously, the better the quality of the champagne, the smaller bubbles, etc. But I found it really useful to do it at the beginning and then at the end. I think your first instincts as well are sometimes your best ones before you start second guessing yourself. Obviously, you're taught to not jump to conclusions about what the wine is, so that isn't important, and it really isn't either. When you get your marks at the end of these courses, it doesn't matter if you've got the wine right or not. The marks are quite low for the wine itself and where it's from. So the important things are is pulling out those descriptors for what it looks like and the smell and the taste. I found it useful to do it at the very beginning. So in my lineup, I'm not sure if I can tell you or not because the W set don't like. but I had this is general information, isn't it? That I got a vintage champagne, got an Asti, and I got a. An Australian sparkling wine. So those three, I think you'd be fairly happy with if you were an exam. The vintage champagne has specific tastes and smells that you would hopefully pick up. The Asti is the one that you would probably get first. I mean, there's nothing that quite smells like Asti. And then the sparkling Australian wine was the tricky one, but there are obviously ways of picking that out as well, with the ripeness of the fruit and richness and that sort of thing, which anyone on the diploma course will have been taught, hopefully, and will pick up. So the way round of doing it, I would definitely do is the tasting first and then the theory, because I whittled through my tasting, or rattled through my tasting rather, and then the theory is the thing I think that most diploma students find the hardest. So by that time, once you've got there, you've done your tasting, you've written all those notes, you've got your arm in action writing. And then with your theory, that's definitely my second bit. And to give yourself the set number of minutes and to not go over that for each bit as well. I know, I think there's now an hour and a half. So I had an hour. So I had to do 10 minutes for each bit, 10 minutes per wine, and then 10 minutes per question, which was very tricky, and you had to write extremely fast. But it's just about, for those exams anyway, getting as much information as you can down on the paper in a coherent fashion so that people can read it and understand it. I would suggest doing tasting first and then theory second, and leaving yourself with a little bit of time to go back over those flat sparkling wines. I think with fortified I'm not sure if it matters either way, because all they'll do is cool down if they are warm. Warm up if they're chilled a little bit. But I would personally stick with the same way of doing that as well, because they might have opened up a bit. Every wine opens up once it's opened, obviously. And in the fortified world, obviously, you know, those you may have first impressions, but then you may pick up some other descriptors that will have come from it being open for a little while in the glass. So yeah, that would be my recommendation, but it's up to you. If you have to work out, if you do an exam and if it works for you in the exam, do it that way next time. That's what I would suggest.
Related to that, another question that was sent across was, I'd be really interested to know what they each felt was the most valuable way to study theory and tasting, and what they, in hindsight, would not have done.
I think you pick up tips and tricks and learn how to study along the way, or relearn if you left school a long time ago, like I did. I think one of the things that was useful at the start but then became less useful was I found that writing out the key areas of each section, this is particularly for the light wines at the end because it's such a massive part of it, I found that writing out pages and pages and pages and pages of notes to start with was useful, because I was writing down, I was remembering it. But then by the time I'd got to the back of the book, I'd forgotten all the stuff at the front of the book, because there's so much of it that you have to come up with a better way of doing it. So anyway, I tried the same thing again. I got some notebooks and I used them kind of like flashcards, but I didn't really get on with the flashcards type of learning, which I know a lot of people do. So don't discount that. If it works for you, do it. Mm. But I've never remembered facts off pieces of paper like that. So stupidly, anyway, I did it again. Not stupidly, but you do pick up some of the facts. But it was as much for my handwriting as anything else. But I think I wasted a bit of time doing that. I think if I'd do it again, then I probably would have done a more a concentrated way of doing it. So what I did then, it helped me learn, is to highlight bits of a book. So I printed out the book, which cost a bit, and is a very, very thick book when you printed it all out of the D3. Mm-hmm. And what I do is I try to remember specific bits of those pages. So if there was a photo on it, so I always remember the hill at Hermitage from this book. So there was a hill, there was a picture of the hill at Hermitage, the Northern Rhone, and underneath it were, if I can remember rightly now, were all the crop, the hectares that you could pick, the limits on grapes that you could pick. But it also had some really interesting details about the hill, and I kind of used the picture as a kind of way of putting all the facts onto the picture in my head, and then kind of remembering it like that. So it wasn't just written word. It was a kind of a visual thing as well. So that helped me. And I kind of learned that myself while I was doing it. I'm sure a lot of other people use that. And color was another thing as well. So I would color code different sections, some in green, some in red, so that I could remember where they were. So I think at Rioja at the time, I remember doing as red. And I remember doing a lot of bits of Rioja, and there were lots of new laws around Rioja, which were coming out at the time. And it helped me remember the names of the areas and where they were, and which grapes were grown in each different region of Rioja, and that type of thing. The other tips or the other things that I did, which may help other people, may not, were, we were talking earlier about not getting too hung up on the facts. You need to know the facts, obviously, because that's that's what you get marked on. But it's the way that you pull them all together. And what I would suggest is that not getting too hung up on facts is trying to remember the facts as easily as you can. So so limits on crops in France particularly, I mean, there's too many to remember in Italy and Spain. So what I did was I did a Excel spreadsheet. And at the very top was, I think it was Prosecco, And at the very bottom, there were things, you know, Sauternes. So, you know, you're not allowed to, obviously, can't pick many grapes in Sauternes. Noble rot. But whereas in Prosecco, they you know, quite high yields, and they want to get as much liquid out as possible. May not make it bad, but it's just those are the levels. So yeah, on a spreadsheet, I split it down into 100 hectolitres per hectare to 90, and then 80 to 70, and I colour-coded all those sections, and I tried to remember the main ones that were in all those sections, just so I had a bit of a handle in the exam on if they asked that, I could kind of remember that Excel spreadsheet and the colours and go back to it and think, aha, yeah, most of the Rhone varieties are in the 45 zone or whatever. Yeah. They're green, whatever. So that was definitely helped me. A lot of people in my class actually use colour. So I'm not really a colour visual learner, but it definitely helped me on the page anyway to do that sort of thing. The other one was when, which I know a lot of people find trickier, what grapes ripen early, which ones ripen late, which ones flower first and then ripen late, so they have a long season, all that sort of stuff. So to remember which grapes do what, basically, and their characteristics. So I did another a kind of a flowchart. So I think Sally Easton's got one in her viticultural book, which used to be on the reading list. But if you haven't got that, I basically did like a bar graph. So I draw across and I do all the ones that were early ripeners and early, early flowering, early ripening. Early. And I do all the ones that were late, and then I do all the ones that were early late. And then split them up into sections and color code them as well, so that I could go back to the early ones. And a lot of it has to do with climate. So you learn these things when you do the courses. So, you know, obviously the early ripeners and are good for cooler climates like the UK. So, that's the common sense behind it. But if it helps you, then by all means, use those kind of techniques. So those couple of the techniques that I used. And then, there's no way around it. You have to remember facts as well. So as well as all those things that help you to put all that together, I found, listening podcasts like your own. I must admit during the, revision, and I, you know, listened to other podcasts, obviously. And I watched videos like the Wine Masters videos, which were out at the time. I think there was Italy and France. I think it was Italy and France, which actually helped for the business side of things in D3, because I could remember the lovely drone shots over the vineyards and the interviews with the main producers. And I think when you work in the industry as well, which I didn't at the time, it'll probably help you more with the business side of things, or it should do, because you will have hopefully bought wine from different producers, and you'll know, you know, which producers are where and how big they are and whether they're a cooperative or a single vineyard or whatever, which I didn't have the benefit of the time, but you pick that up anyway, but that's a help.
The last attendee question that I've got here, so I'll just read this out. The big thing that I would love to learn from your guests is how they overcame exam jitters and what they did the night before and the day of the exams.
Yeah, exam jitters never go away. And the night before is a tricky one. You always doubt yourself. And my advice would be to not stress on details the night before. I wouldn't even bother to learn anything the night. Don't even try to learn anything, even the couple of days before the exam, because what you've remembered before then should be the things that you remember for the exam. I think if you try to remember too many facts in the day before, the days before, then you'll make yourself even more nervous. I think what I did anyway is I just did general learning. So I like I said before in the other one I watched, I found the watching videos online very relaxing the night before. So instead of trying to remember lots of different facts, I just watched some wine videos and tried to kind of, you know, I was involved in wine and if I picked up something new, then fantastic. But it was, for me, the days before an exam are much more a visual thing for me. So the facts, you know, you need to learn them by rote, however you do them best, flashcards or writing them out or color coding, whatever you do. But those days before, for me anyway, were visual and audio. So was listening to podcasts, was watching videos, and just yeah, not worrying about what was in the exams, but trying to try and just relax a little bit and watch something. It's what you're interested in. It's what you're doing this for. But it's not a stressful thing to do before an exam. So I know a lot of people don't like to do that, but anyway, that was my way of relaxing. That was the night before. On the day itself, it's, I know lots of people have got lots of different techniques for relaxing on the day of exams. I personally just like to get to the exam area a little bit earlier. And I think a lot of other people do too. But when I got to D3, there were lots and lots of people at the exam about an hour before it. I found it really useful just to have a chat with people about what they're worried about, what they're not worried about, what they're going to do afterwards, you know, not stress too much about what's going to come up in the exam, because you've done months and months and months of revision before that. So yeah, you'll know lots of people from your course, probably from the industry if you've been in it for longer than I was. So you'll bump into lots of people from your class and classes you've been in before. So for me, it was just a case of relaxing and talking to them. And if they're worried about something, relaxing them. And in turn, that helped me relax because I was giving them some advice and guidance. And likewise, I can't remember that, but I'm sure people did to me as well. And people do try and test other people out before the exam, but I never like getting involved in that. You know, if you remember things, you remember them. If you don't, you don't. And being tested before the actual exam is just ridiculous for me, but people like doing that. You know, there's certain characters that like pushing other people's buttons, or they like to see how much people, you know and to make themselves feel better or whatever. But yeah, I just like to try and relax as much as possible and talk to people, and then, you know, when you're in that exam, that's the stressful bit. So calming down during the exam is just to get stuck in. There's no other way around it. I mean, you just have to get involved and if you don't know something, you don't know something. You know, that's not the end of the world. If you haven't revised it, you haven't revised it, you know, but that's in D3, there are going to be areas that you haven't revised as much as other areas. It's such a big syllabus that you just can't learn the whole thing. I don't think, unless you've been in the industry for years and years and years and you know lots of these facts, then that wasn't me. So you just need to learn as much as possible and get on with it. And if you don't know something, just go, don't try and fudge it either. That will be a bit of advice from me in an exam. So if you don't really know something, then don't mention it. So if you don't know the pectoralis for a certain thing, just don't bother writing it, because if you get it wrong, you could get marked down for it. You probably won't do, but you could do that. So if you don't know something, just don't put it in. Don't guess, basically. That'll be my advice, which I did in a couple of areas against my own better judgment. And then you get low marks in those areas.
Really, thank you so much. I think it's, you've sort of really, I think, given a really complimentary set of advice, I would say. There is like lots of things that I think people can use in the short term, in the medium term, in the longer term, things around revision, things around organization, things around relaxation. I really think and believe that that's going to be super helpful to a lot of people out there. So that's absolutely brilliant. Really, yeah, the last thing that I would just like to ask you about, and I think it's hopefully going to be something nice to reflect on, is just actually the prize itself. Mm-hmm. So you were the winner of the Moët & Chandon prize for the Unit 5 sparkling wine. What did you win? What were you awarded? And have you had the chance to take that yet, given everything that's going on?
So first of all, it was I got the news that I'd won the sparkling wine prize after doing the first day of the D3. So it was a bit of a fillip, actually, because I it made me feel better for the next day. So I think we'd done the theory that day in the light wines, and we were on our way to Noble Rock because we thought we should celebrate. We'd done theory and have some expensive glasses of wine, some nice expensive glasses of wine. And on the way there, my phone went and they told me that I'd won this award. So at the time, I didn't actually realize that there were awards for different parts of the course. It didn't even cross my mind. I was so hell-bent on passing the diploma. It hadn't even crossed my mind. I didn't look into it in that depth. I just wanted to know if I could pass or not. Anyway, so that was a really, really nice surprise. And the people around me were very complimentary, and you know, they were happy for me. I got the news that was in October 2019 when I did my last exams. And I was due to take the trip to Moët and Chandon in France last year, obviously. And we were preparing for it in February. So we were coming up with dates about when I could travel and all that. And then, of course, the world ended, or stopped anyway. I couldn't obviously take my or do my prize, which a lot of the other people I'm sure you've interviewed have said the same thing. They couldn't go abroad or couldn't take their prizes. So, I've been in close contact with them actually ever since, and they've been very helpful. And I think the last email I got from them was November, obviously, saying that they'd try and come up with a date this summer, dependent on COVID-19 and with restrictions and that sort of thing. So hopefully the world will be an easier place to navigate come this summer. But who knows? Yeah, it might well be put off till next year if things don't get better as quickly as... that's in France as well, so it's not actually the situation in the UK. It depends on the situation in France in the summer as well. So I'm looking forward to it. But apparently I'm going to have to write a report and take pictures and report back to WSET so that it can be published for other students to look at. So it will be fun when I do it.
Yeah. This is totally optional. If there's anything else that you'd like to share about your sort of current position in the wine trade or anything that's front of mind, and obviously, how people can find you online. Yeah, okay. Do feel free to share anything.
Well, first
of
all, I'd just like to say that you need to think, like we said before, you need to think carefully about doing the diploma, but it's definitely one of the best experiences that I've ever done. I was a journalist for 20 years, loved my job. But I think when you become passionate about something, especially wine, and get a bit obsessed with it, and your family start to think that you're a geek, then I think it's really important to do something that you love, and not necessarily give up your other job, but to get a side job or whatever. But I am going to take the plunge. It's just because of COVID-19 that there are certain things, obviously, that I can't really put both feet into at the moment. But yeah, no, I'd highly recommend the diploma. Is one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life, but definitely one of the most fulfilling. And I think it just goes back to, when you're at school and you're learning things, I think the older you get, the more you appreciate learning. And the more you appreciate the hard work that goes into it and comes out the other side. So I definitely highly recommend doing it if you have the time and the money and the backing. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, I'm Cornwall Wine. And I'm also Cornwall Wine on Twitter. My tasting company will be called Curno Wine, which is Curno Wine. So that is, I'm going to start setting that up. Obviously, because of COVID, I can't go into anyone's cottages and I can't do tastings with anyone before that. Hopefully with everyone else, as the spring and summer things become easier, then that will hopefully kick off. So if you want to, I put lots of different pictures up on Instagram. It's not just wine, pictures of my pets, pictures of Cornwall. So if you're interested in that or anything else, then follow. If not, don't.
Thank you so much, Derek. I think this is such a useful episode, covering so many aspects of your preparation. As I mentioned at the time, I'm sure this will help so many people at different stages of the diploma. An instant classic. If you're watching on the Summit webpage, do see below for the timestamps that will let you navigate to any part of the episode. And if you're listening on your podcast player and would like full access to the Summit materials, please visit interpretingwine.com/summit today. If you know someone who would find this episode useful, please do share the direct link, which is interpretingwine.com/440. And if you found it really useful, then do please leave the episode an iTunes review on the same link. Next time on the WSET Diploma Student Summit, I speak with the winner of the Louis Jadot Burgundy Prize, Phoebe French. See you then.